I'm going to go ahead and start.
Yeah.
Everybody ready?
Good evening.
It is Tuesday, February 13, 2024, 6 p.m., and I call the Wrangell Assembly to order. Tonight, the Pledge of Allegiance will be led by Assembly Member Powell.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Yes, Assembly Members Robbins.
Here.
Morrison.
Here.
Audison.
Here.
Davenport.
Here.
Powell.
Here.
DeBoer.
Here.
And Mayor
here. Ceremonial matters, there are none. Persons to be heard. Thank you. All right, first up we have Casey Schlautzhauer. I'm so sorry.
Cassie Schlautzhauer.
Yes. Is Cassie here?
I'm texting her. I'm letting her know she needs to be here now.
Okay. Thank you. We'll go to Chris Ellis. Would you like to speak now or when the item comes up?
I'll just go ahead and speak now. And
okay.
You can remember it. It's kind of an advisory piece on the agenda, as near as I could tell, concerning the issue of requiring insurance and, or a surcharge for use of the harbor. And I spoke briefly at the harbor meeting back in January when they passed it and sent it on to you, and apparently now you are looking at it and sending it back to the Harbor Commission. I want to applaud the points made by the administration and the bullet points in the agenda because they cover many of the concerns that I'm trying to bring up. And I missed the initial arguments before the Harbor Commission because I never heard about them. That happens with a lot of us older people in Wrangell. If we're not on Facebook and we're not real tech savvy, we don't hear about a lot of things until it's almost too late to make any comments. But basically, just to reiterate on those bullet points, the type of insurance that's going to be required is very important. I've done some research on what other harbors are doing. Seward and Whittier basically seem to be the only harbors that require insurance, but they specifically require liability. Whittier has a $300,000 amount for their basic liability for incident, and Seward's issues are based on the type and use of the vessel that is asking for moorage. But it is very specific, and when you get the insurance, you have to have it specified with the insurance company to be sure that you have the right kind. Insurance is not a magic bullet. It doesn't necessarily cover what you think it's going to cover. Basically, you can talk with many boat owners down in Florida after Hurricane Ian. Some of them are still waiting for coverage. Many of them were rejected just because of the fact that they didn't have the right kind of insurance. Just saying marine insurance would allow someone to do it without having anything that's going to do anything that the harbor wants it to do. The surcharge option, the city of Wrangell has proposed it to be $5 per foot per month. If you have a 35-foot vessel, that's going to be $175 a month on top of what you're already paying, or $2,100 a year. Currently, the moorage rate for a 35-foot vessel is just a little over $1,500. So that would more than double what a person with a 35-foot boat would have to pay for moorage. Juno, which was the only listed surcharge amount that I could find in my basic research, lists their amount of a surcharge as 31 cents a foot per month. So for the 35-foot vessel in Juneau, it would be $10.35 a month or $130.20 a year. Just to put it kind of in perspective and give you a sense of what you're asking harbor users to pay, okay? That's a hell of a lot of money. And a lot of the people who are using the harbor are older, fixed incomes, sort of getting to enjoy their vessels, still using them, but on top of all the increases with everything else, adding that to the cost of keeping a boat in the harbor is going to be almost impossible. The choice to get insurance if you have an old wood boat that's classified as commercial is virtually impossible. It's not a question of opting out. It's there are virtually no providers who are covering that kind of a vessel. I have made calls all over the country, literally. And the only person who would even consider it needs to know what the Wrangell resolution or ordinance is going to say before they can give me a quote, because then they will know what kind of insurance would be required. They are the only provider, as I am aware of right now, that is covering wooden boats in the Seward Harbor, and they need to know specifically what the city would require. Basically, right now, the issue that the harbor is trying to deal with is derelict vessels. The harbor has the tools to deal with it. They don't have to let boats stay there for a couple of years without paying. They don't have to let boats in danger of sinking stay there. They can do something a lot faster and a lot quicker rather than allowing those things to happen. When they impound a vessel, they don't have to just let it sit in the harbor and sink. They can haul it out. It is much cheaper to haul a boat out of the water and put it on land than to try to pick it up from the bottom of the ocean. And we have the tools to do that. You know, getting the money back from somebody is going to be the same issue no matter what happens, but it's a whole lot less up front if you don't let it sink in the first place. And for the people who have the boats, when you put the money into maintenance of those boats to keep it floating, rather than paying for a surcharge in case somebody else's boat sinks, it doesn't make sense. It makes sense to maintain your vessel. And to take $2,000 that you could use to maintain the vessel for basically to sit in a hole in case somebody sinks something. The other thing to look at is how many vessels have actually sunk in the Wrangell Harbor and who is responsible. You know? Most boat owners don't want to sink their vessel, and most boat owners will take care of them. If the city impounds a vessel and it sinks, it's not really the boat owner's fault. It's the city's for letting that happen. In terms of who's going to be required to do this, is it going to include every vessel? Is there going to be a size limit? Are transient vessels going to be attached the same way that regular stall holders are?
Thank you.
I did my three.
Thank you. Casey, would you like to speak now on an agenda item, or would you like to wait for that item to come up?
I don't believe it's a non-agenda.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Please state your name and...
And my address? Do I need to...
No.
The address? Okay, sorry. So my name is Cassie Schlotzhauer. I've been a resident in Wrangell for about 10 years now. I just wanted to come because I'm sure the topic has been brought up before several times about our city parks. I have two younger daughters that frequent a lot of the parks here, and a lot of them are a little bit of some repair needed in a handful of the parks I've noticed. Due to a recent loss of a family member. I am wanting to...
We need to do a dedication park, and we thought that the Shoemaker Park location would be a great place to do that. And we know that there's other parks that also need some issues addressed, but that park being that it's used so much, and there's that new work that's being done out there for new housing and such, we thought it would be a great place to do a dedication park, and it just, I don't know, we just really like the idea.
Yeah, so for people who don't know, it would be a dedication park for our daughter who passed away in November. But we have had a lot of fun in that location in the past as a family, and we know that that park has been there for quite a while, and it seems as though it would be a very good place to put a park. I've been working with Lucy, our Parks and Recreation Director, about some directions we can take for it. I know there's other parks that are needing some work done to them, but I've been working with a designer out of Anchorage for different park structures, and we've been working together on maybe creating a sponsorship plan for businesses in town to help funding for it. We have some funding of our own that we want to put into it as well. I guess ultimately we're just here because we want to spread the word that that's kind of the initiative that we want to take. And if we need help from the city, I just wanted it to be on everybody's radar that we're hoping to gear our focus towards the Shoemaker Park, not to push any of the other ones aside, but I feel as though if we have a brand new accessible park for the community, it'll spark more interest in hopefully starting to gain funding via grants or sponsorship programs again to help in fixing all of the other parks that we have in town. Another point that I want to bring up about this park in specifically is that we would like to make it accessible for all children and some adults. Our daughter was disabled. She had cerebral palsy, so she couldn't do a lot of the things that a lot of children could. So I want to make it a park that all children can go to and hopefully have fun in by having a ADA compliant flooring on the ground, as well as an ADA swing for children to utilize as well. We feel that the Shoemaker location would be a good one because we have those. I know you guys are going to have some lots open for sale out there, and that may make those even more appealing than they already are. So ultimately, I just wanted to make the city aware and the town know, aware as well, that I'm hoping we can start reaching out for some help to get this park built.
Thank you. Would be very welcomed, and thank you for bringing it to us, and work with the Parks and Rec board, and continue to work with the Parks and Rec director, and we'll keep posted on the progress.
Okay, cool. All right, thank you so much.
Thank you. Rod Rill?
I want to wait.
Okay, and that is item, that's the public hearing. And Wayne Ellis.
Yeah, I'd like to address the mortgage issue again on the insurance issue. On the dock where I park my boat, the Finger, less than half the boats have insurance. And it's only about a dozen boats. But I would suspect that less than half the boats at Shoemaker have insurance. The only boats that really have insurance are maybe the yachts and some of the fishermen who still owe money on their boats. And of those that have insurance, probably none of them will cover raising a boat that sinks. You can check that, but that is a specific liability rider on an insurance policy. I think that maybe there are some issues that the Harbor Department could work with people getting something other than insurance. One of the things that I've talked to them about the last time, the Harbor Committee, I testified that bilge alarms are something that owners could put in, audible bilge alarms, or actually visual and audible bilge alarms. They're relatively cheap compared to insurance. They definitely have the advantage of being something that will help to keep a boat from sinking, because other people can come to the help of their boat. The harbor department, they can call the harbor department and pumps can be delivered. And it's a lot easier to keep a boat from sinking than it is to raise a boat, not to mention a whole lot cheaper. Other than that, I guess I really didn't prepare. I didn't have time to prepare. I didn't think about it today. I was busy doing other things. So that's all I have.
Okay, thank you. Any other persons to be heard? All right. Moving on, amendments to the agenda. Any assembly member have any amendments to offer up? Seeing none.
Did you want me to move that one? You want to discuss it?
Yeah.
Okay, I'd like to move D, I believe it's D.
6D?
Yeah, 6D into...
unfinished business?
Unfinished business, yes, please.
Okay. 6D is now in unfinished business assembly. Any other amendments to the agenda? Hearing none, conflict of interest. Does any assembly member have a conflict on any item? Assembly member Dalrymple?
Madam Mayor, I believe we all have a conflict, but I especially feel that way for item 13H, which is giving ourselves compensation.
All right. On this, I hear where you're coming from, but we belong to a class of individuals, maybe even employees, if that goes through. So I will rule we do not have a conflict. Any opposition to that ruling? All right, hearing none?
That's what I say, same thing.
Okay. All right, thank you for bringing that up, though. Any other conflicts of interest? All right, consent agenda. I'll entertain a motion with exception to item 6D.
Move to approve the consent agenda as submitted with D removed.
Second.
Okay, motion by Morrison, second by Powell. Any discussion? All right, poll vote, please.
Yes, Assembly Members Morrison?
Yes.
Otteson?
Yes.
Dalrymple?
Yes.
Powell?
Yes.
DeBoer?
Yes.
Robbins?
Yes.
And Mayor
Gilbert. Yes. Borough Manager's Report.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'm going to defer to Kate. She's got a verbal economic development report, and Matt's got a little presentation as well.
Awesome. Thank you, Mason. So I just wanted to provide some highlights from my recent travel. I was out of the office for 2 weeks to head to Seattle for the Pacific Northwest Cruise Symposium. We also attended the Seattle Boat Show in partnership with the Harbor Department, and then finished off in Juneau for Southeast Conference, and now trying to climb out of all the tasks that piled up while I was gone. The Cruise Symposium, I just wanted to highlight that there were 300 individuals from the industry there. It was the first event that they've had in this region. Typically, there's one for the nation in Miami, which we have not been to as an organization. We had one day of education, in an evening event where I was able to shake hands with the governor again and thank him for his praise of Wrangell and our mayor's good work and manager's good work during the landslide. The day of education involved a tribal partner panel, cruise executive panel, and a tourism task force panel, which kind of highlighted some of the development of policy that's going on in Sitka and Juneau. They also talked a little bit about marketing accessibility within our community. So accessibility, as it relates to the cruise industry, they market themselves as one of the most accessible ways to travel. And we actually have some pretty good access points for sightseeing in Wrangell. So we'll be working on marketing that to cruise passengers, in particular, Petroglyph Beach viewing platform, has an ADA accessible ramp there. So we certainly want to promote that, and that was encouraged at the symposium. We increased agency and partner contacts, leveraged a little bit of our community engagement, and we'll work with cruise line executives to help build out some of our policies. In Sitka, in Juneau in particular, instead of having a code or an ordinance, rather, that limits how many cruise passengers can come in a day or how many ships can come, that's actually detailed in a memorandum of agreement with the industry particularly. So we have the tourism management best practices that kind of highlight all the principles and how we function and how you can report certain things if you identify issues. But it's going to be an agreement with the partner agencies that's really going to help curtail growth in a way that is palatable to the community and the leaders. So just wanted to highlight that for folks. We're also going to start working with the cruise industry, thanks to Matt, for some community development. Matt will speak a little bit more to the Coast Guard that came in earlier last week, but we have an opportunity to do showings of cruise ships. We can bring kids on board. They'll do stewardship programs in our community. So they come frequently, so we might as well capitalize on that and make it a positive thing, not just from a revenue perspective, but from a community engagement one. I also wanted to highlight for folks that we lost 3 ports of call this season to Norwegian Cruise Lines, who are rerouting some of their ships from Wrangell to Klohok. So that's 3 sailings that will be out. I don't know off the top of my head what the total passenger capacity is for that, but I think we're going to start seeing more of that. And the reason why is because Huna Totem Corp, otherwise commonly known as Icy Strait Point, is building out cruise infrastructure in other communities, Klohok, Juneau, and Whittier. And Klohok right now doesn't have their deep water port established, although they have a site poised for development. So they're going to have to lighter passengers from offshore to their land-based excursions. But it's something that I think we're going to see continue, and we should not ignore that and figure out how we're going to maintain and preserve the relationships that we have and grow the schedule in a way that works well for us. The reason why that's happening and so appealing to cruise lines is because Huna Totem Corp has a direct relationship with cruise agencies, which carves out the middleman, so they save money. And that's really the driving force of it. And Huna Totem Corp has a pretty strong operation. So we'll be discussing that between the port and the borough manager in our office in the next couple of weeks to see how we can strategize against that, or for it, however we fall in our strategy. The Seattle Boat Show overall was a positive experience. The BACO was there, so Michael Villarma and Deanna Villarma were there, and one of the boats that's going to be manufactured on our island here soon was showcased outside of the boat show, which was awesome. It was a really good draw, and it was the only vessel of its kind and the only vessel that was showcased at the front entrance of the facility, so everybody had to walk past it. I think they did really well while they were there, and it was the first time, so it was neat to have that presence from our community. We're questioning whether it's lucrative enough for us to continue going. It's a high expense. The Port and Harbor Association of Alaska actually goes, and they bring a number of port directors or staff members there to help represent the communities, and they're open to us partnering with them. I would say that it's important for us to continue a presence at the boat show, but we don't necessarily have to have a booth to do that. We could send someone down, they could network during other events, and have other business meetings that were productive. Matt did establish a trip giveaway with some technology attached to it, so we have some analytics to see what the points of interest were on our website and how many people we engaged with, but the numbers weren't that great. We actually had a higher return on our basically website hits than at the Marine Expo, which is only a 3-day show. So we're going to be looking at that with the Port Commission and seeing if we want to change course. One thing we really did focus on, though, was promoting Wrangell as a great place to moor your boat over the winter. A lot of cruisers come up from the Pacific Northwest. They don't want to take the trip all the way back down to Seattle, so they want a good place to keep their vessel in Wrangell. Well, yeah, that's where they're going to keep it because we told them to. anyway, so looking at strategies there, and then just wanted to finish off with some highlights at Southeast Conference, and then forecast a couple community engagement activities. So I was the only one that went to Southeast Conference this year. It was a good experience. Last year was the first time I went. There was a lot of discussion about transportation. Wrangell obviously is a participant of the Thriving Communities and the Port Infrastructure Development Program, Department of Transportation. So we were highlighted. Wrangell was on the board a lot, and not just for our recent tragedy, but for the good work the community is doing and the projects that we have on our roster. So that was great to see, highlighting some known and emerging industry opportunities that might inform some developments at the mill, energy generation, and shore power for electrification of vessels is going to be really important. By 2050, even though it's a very lofty, almost impossible goal, the cruise industry would be projected for net zero emissions, and so that's going to drive their need for energy on shore. Whether we would be able to supply that or not is yet to be seen, but it's definitely coming. Waste management, there's a pretty heavy need regionally for processing waste, maybe even turning waste into energy. I know that that also seems very innovative and far-fetched, but the reality is trash isn't sexy, but money is, and trash makes money. And so I think that's something to think about. Air mobility centers, so drone transportation of goods is really on the horizon. And then, of course, as we know, mariculture is a big emerging industry as well. And those things tie into workforce opportunities. Biggest drivers in workforce, healthcare, technology, computer science, transportation, and maritime industry. So another thing that we'll be working on, which is a mission of the Economic Development Board, is to support workforce development and education in Wrangell. So we'll be working with the Alaska Marine Highway System, cruise lines, the University of Alaska, to see about some synergies in getting our young kids exposed to these opportunities early and often, because we're mariners just by the nature of where we live. And global transportation is such that maritime jobs are never going away. So it's something that we should really continue pushing. Highlighting a couple of things that I think Mason suggested in a couple meetings back, out-migration of residents in the state of Alaska is one of our biggest threats to economic stability and overall growth. The state has had a negative net migration of residents for the past 10 years. And perhaps Wrangell even longer. So it's definitely something that we need to be focusing on and not shy away from. Feels a little scary when you start talking about that because you don't want to sound the alarm bells and cause people to retreat or leave Wrangell because of future concerns. But I definitely think we should be thinking seriously about how to retain our residents and bring more residents to our community. Biggest thing that drives residents out of Alaska, housing, affordability, and childcare. You hear that everywhere, not just in the state, but in the nation overall. An interesting piece about housing that I learned, why is housing such an issue? We have less people in Wrangell, but still have a housing issue. Why is that? Well, we used to have an average of 2.6 residents in a household. Now we only have an average of 2.3. Doesn't seem like a huge difference, 0.3. But what that translates to is a need for an additional 70,000 housing units within the state. That's a lot. That is a lot. So what does that look like for Wrangell? I don't have those metrics, but hopefully development at Aldertop will curve that a little bit and that we sell all those lots and can develop phase two and keep moving forward and have a new playground at Shoemaker Park that attracts people there. a couple of things I would just encourage us to think about preserving. Recreation is why a lot of us live here, but not everybody has the means to go off island, go up river, travel in that fashion. So having parks, green spaces, facilities preserved for recreation is hugely important to retaining our residents. And so we're really grateful to have a thriving Parks and Recreation Department, and feel positively about what Cassie and her husband shared tonight about potential developments there. Education, competitive wages, and then I think you all can see Wrangell's been at the table for a lot of opportunities recently, and that is paying dividends to us. And the more often we can be out there, have our faces out there, and share our story, and make sure that when people have an opportunity, they think about every one of us sitting in this room. Oh, I gotta call Mason, I gotta call Dave or Patty or Kim and tell them about what could be a potential for Wrangell. I think that's really important, and maybe something that was stifled by COVID or funding restrictions in the past, but it's really important. If we're not there, people aren't thinking about us. And then the last thing I would say is, I just really wanna thank the assembly and the manager for pushing forward increased wages to our non-permanent seasonal employees. That was a huge gain for us. For a long time, we did not have good wages to compare to the grocery store, the coffee shops, et cetera. And I think we're a little bit more competitive now at the entry-level positions, and hope to see that continue, because that's going to be a big benefit to us and to the community, and it sets us as a leader to other industry and organizations. So thanks to you all for doing that. The last couple of things I'll leave you with to wrap it up and then pass it over to Matt, who I'm excited for you to hear from. Next weekend, so February 24th, Saturday, we have the home, we're calling it HomeWise Information Fair. That's a one-stop shop for people to learn about the resources, tactics, and planning strategies for building or buying their own home. So we'll have lenders there, contractors there, financial advisors there, tax agents, and other industry partners, as well as real estate agents present, so that we can help people learn how they can build the American dream and buy a piece of property. And because the borough isn't financing or carrying the note for the lots out at Aldertop, we wanted to find some other angle to help fuel people's interest and knowledge and accessibility to purchasing those lots. So we're excited about that. Encourage everybody to stop by. And then Matt may comment on it, but he's coordinating with the Coast Guard for Kids Don't Float event in April. And then, of course, we have our annual Bird Festival in April as well. And that's all I got. Any questions? Okay, Matt.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. As Kate mentioned, I worked with the Coast Guard at the end of January, beginning of February. I was approached in early January by a petty officer on the Coast Guard cutter Pike out of Petersburg to do a public outreach event in tandem with a blanket drive. The blanket drive was put on by the St. Francis Animal Shelter. It seemed to go off very well. There were a lot of clothes and blankets and fish boxes, which I don't know if we were able to snag any of those fish boxes, but nevertheless. I coordinated with the Evergreen Elementary School and the Stickney Middle School to have students come out and view the boat for an open tour. In all, 100 students actually attended the boat and took a tour, as well as 18 members of the public, which I would say is a success. Let's see, what else? I received also permission to photograph students with our new department drone, as well as the camera that we purchased this last fall. Took a lot of great pictures, which will be shared with the school district, as well as Juneau Sector for the Coast Guard. So they will use those for promotional purposes within the Juneau district. As Kate also mentioned, this April and early April, the fast response cutter John McCormick will also be showing up here for a Kids Don't Float, as well as a Kids Don't Float and Touch a Boat. So they're going to be opening up the vessel as well. Some key features, it's based at a Ketchikan right now. It's one of the newest cutters within Southeast. I believe Senator Sullivan worked very hard to get that here. And I think a fun fact the kids will probably love is there is a 50 cal machine gun mounted on the front, which will be probably a highlight of the tours. That'll be at the beginning of April. I believe they'll be working with Chief Radke as well to coordinate that with Wrangell PD. And then there's also some further public outreach events I can't speak about yet. They're not confirmed, but that could be happening on the 4th of July, which will be a fun thing for the public to see. So that's essentially what's happened. Pictures will be coming out soon. There's also some video as well that'll highlight some of the activities on the boat.
Thank you. Any questions? All right. Exciting. And tell the public your name and position again.
My name is Matt Henson. I'm the Marketing and Community Development Coordinator within the Economic Development Department.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. Manager's report, please.
Yes. Thanks, Madam Mayor. I really want to commend Kate and Matt for all the hard work they're doing. Me and Kate went over a list of outstanding items and initiatives that run off on the three different pages, and it's really amazing what we're tackling. But a lot of positive things. I'm impressed with this group of directors, and you know, in every transition there's a little bit of wonkiness and trying to find our stride, but I think we're getting there, and I think our strategic planning session this Thursday is going to really help in that. But I really want to thank the contributions that they've made, and you can tell just how hard they're working. So thanks to Kate and Matt. I want to start off on a real positive note. We have a new employee that I want to introduce to you tonight, Tammy Stromberg. Tammy, would you please stand? Is our new controller for the borough. She's, I'm going to give her a round of applause. Embarrass her a little bit. Tammy worked for Wrangell Public School District for a little bit, and she also just returned from North Slope Borough School District. And she's joining here to make Wrangell her forever home with her husband, Al, and we're really lucky to have her 30 years of finance experience. I think she's going to raise the bar for us. So thank you, Tammy, for joining us, and we're excited to have you as a partner on our team. A couple other positive things and just kind of housekeeping items before I get into the core of the report. Surprisingly, we got an SLGCP grant for $50,000. This is a cybersecurity grant. I really don't know what $50,000 is for because I submitted three different potential projects. So it's either for school security card scanners for securing our school buildings, cybersecurity risk consultation and plan being developed, or potentially a code at the gate of the water treatment plant. So one of those three is funded. I'll let you guys know, but that's exciting. Petersburg actually contracted an IT consulting firm, and they didn't get it, so that's cool. We got one up on them. Always like that. Another positive thing, we were one of four Alaska municipalities to get a GFOA, Government Financial Officers Association Budget Award. So that basically is an award that demonstrates that you demonstrate excellence and best management practices in the budgeting process. So I'd really like to thank the finance department, all the directors that went through last year's FY24 process. It was Wasilla, Kodiak, another big place, and us. So that was pretty cool. And you know, it's uncharacteristic in the first time we've done that. So very exciting. Update on the old hospital. We're continuing to negotiate that. We have a purchase and sale agreement that is amenable. Had discussions with prospective buyers today. So that will be, upon signing, will be released to the Planning and Zoning Commission and Economic Development Board. And then we'll bring it to the Assembly and estimated for the March 12th meeting. So that will run concurrently with six lots requested adjacent on the south side of the property. Those two will be a pair. So we wouldn't approve the hospital without the six lots and vice versa. So that's kind of how the thing's drafted up. But really excited. I know that's one of the big goals of the Assembly is divesting ourselves from that and seeing some potential economic growth and prosperity as a result. So just an update on that. Don Glasner, still working through negotiating that. Currently stands at $1 per square foot for his request, and I'll bring an item before the Assembly. And I still do believe that's in the best interest to pursue sale of those lots, or sale of that extension. And we'll bring something to the Assembly on the February 27th meeting, so just stay posted for that. And I got a request from Assemblymember Otteson to provide job descriptions for all employees of the borough, non-union, union, temps. I want to understand what the best way to do that is. Do you guys want to pick up a thumb drive at the office? Do you want me to email them all out? Do we want to do a work session and go over job descriptions? What's the kind of consensus? What's a good plan?
Well, we're in the middle of negotiations. Mm-hmm. I don't know how soon Assemblymember Otteson wants this. We've talked about some change in job descriptions, or maybe I should say it would be a job description because the job description also indicates the placement on the wage and grade mm-hmm. scale. Mm-hmm. So I think it may require a little bit of work unless you want the current job descriptions.
The current.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think probably via computer would be the best.
So anybody that wants the job descriptions to spring, you have to come to me with a thumb drive, and then I'll drop them on a thumb drive.
That's probably the easiest because there's a lot of job descriptions.
Yeah, because that's public. We would do that for anybody.
And we have a lot of cleanup to do. If you notice, a lot of our titles on our job descriptions mm-hmm. versus a wage and grade table, it's kind of messy. Our job descriptions look outdated. I think Matt was looking at updating our job description template, making it look a little bit more appealing. That's something to do, but we could use probably a little work and maybe a work session at some point in time. So thanks to Assemblymember Otteson for bringing that up. Okay, kind of getting to the media report. We met with DGGS up in Juneau prior to the governor's State of the State, kind of looked through the draft of the preliminary interpretive report, and that has since been released.
Tell the public what DGGS is and what role they played with the landslide.
Yep, so and I'll kind of comment on a little bit later, too. DGGS stands for the Department of Geophysical and Geological Surveys. They're a division of Department of Natural Resources, or DNR. They were really key in analyzing the data and the conditions, variables associated with pre- and post-landslide, and they've been continuing to monitor those with DOT in conjunction with them. I have a little bit more of a commentary later in the report. That preliminary interpretive report, what we were calling the causation report before, is available on our website as well as Facebook. There's links associated with it. If you go to the borough manager's reports, there's a letter to the community along with that hyperlink that'll take you to the report. So encourage everybody to study that and get informed. So that was a great development milestone. We also had discussions this last Friday with DOT. Many people remember Travis Eckhoff, who's here as part of the landslide DOT crew, and Pat Dreyer and a few others. And so we talked a lot about, I got a lot of questions on what are the drone in the box doing, what are the weather stations doing, how do we see the data they're collecting. So I actually had a little presentation, I've included that in the packet, is also on the borough manager's reports section on the website, on the frequency of data that they're collecting, when it'll be made available. But generally the story is this, the drone is flying on Wednesdays, weather permitting, they're absorbing that data, they're meeting as a team and interpreting it, and then they will seek to continue to do that. If there's anything concerning as a result of the ortho imagery that they're collecting, they'll inform me directly and the DNR point of contact will be Mort Larson, who did the preliminary interpretive report. So the three of us will be in tune if there's anything alarming that happens. And that'll be relayed on Nixel if there's anything of emergency circumstances to be posted. But what's really neat is they're creating a four-dimensional model and understanding the erosion and deposits that are occurring on that landslide scope as well as other landslide prone areas. So they're hoping to make that public. It's going to take a little bit to get rolled out. Those four-dimensional models are really sophisticated, but that ortho image is really cool. The weather stations themselves, there's one weather station that's deployed on the Roberts property currently. That data is being collected into a CSV file, and then it'll be linked to the weather service. So people like Lincoln Rock will be able to log on and say, this is how much rainfall has been collected, have some soil content composition. And that'll be really helpful, I think, for people to see. And I think the goal was to get more weather stations. They're going to do another one in 2 weeks up on the top of the landslide at milepost 11.2. And really excited to collect that data, allow for more interpretation, and use that for a potential landslide advisory platform. So good developments there. We also kind of had the idea, maybe I was narrow-minded initially and thinking we need to work with Petersburg and Haines on an advisory platform. Reached out to Alaska Municipal League. Nils Andreessen is the executive director, and maybe have a little bit bigger vision for this advisory platform and actually make it a subscriber-based thing and have them build the platform. They have the tools, they have a team, they have deeper pockets than the borough, the resources to pull that off. So there were in conversations about having them develop a website to where landslide and avalanche risk is communicated to subscribers, municipal subscribers. We as a municipality would be the subscriber, it wouldn't be individual residents. But it's a really great concept. We're going to attend the landslide work group over in Sitka and have further discussions about it. So very excited to work through that with Alaska Municipal League. State lobbying delegation visit. So Mayor Gilbert and I had the pleasure of going to the governor's State of the State. I was actually just mayor's ride along. They kicked me out, and mayor was the guest of honor. And the governor did a really exceptional job of honoring the community of Wrangell, our first responders, and Mayor Gilbert for all their efforts during the landslide time. And I think the mayor represented the community extraordinarily well. Out of all the guests there and the pre-funk that we had, she had a really, really nice speech, and I think it was really well received. So thanks, Patty, for letting me be your ride along. We also had really good conversations with DGGS, like I said, on the preliminary interpretive report. One of the other initiatives we're doing, and this is an item tonight that I had you guys pull out, is a FEMA Cooperative Technical Partners Program. That's a grant program through FEMA that allows DNR to apply for a grant for further funding and studying of all area of concerns of the borough. So they're submitting kind of a pie-in-the-sky request, but every landslide-prone area in the borough will be submitted for more data collection and monitoring. We may see more equipment, we may see more field studies as a result of that, but they put a lot of work into that, and we're just we're like a sub-recipient of that at that grant application. So that you will be demonstrating hopefully your approval of that tonight, and I'll have a few more things to say on that as we get into it. We also met with members of our delegation, Senator Stedman. It was a quick visit. Mayor Gilbert wasn't there yet, but 15 minutes. He wasn't super concerned about capital projects just yet because there's a lot to get through on the operating budget with a big permanent fund and SB 88 and lots going on. So we conveyed the dam supplemental for not the dam supplemental, but the water dam supplemental for FY24 and getting that across the finish line. That confidence level is pretty high. We also conveyed the public safety building would be the next on our list, and in terms of CAPSIS, and Amber is just working through the last CAPSIS items that are due on February 16th. So debate for the capital budget is forthcoming. We conveyed those very same things to Representative Ortez when we talked to him, and he's well aware. We also talked about the Marine Highway System and SB 88 and advocacy of those. We also had the privilege of meeting with Commissioner Boyle from DNR and talked about an abundance of issues. DNR was a really productive visit. I think Mayor Gilbert would agree. We talked about the emergency access road easement and getting site control for the potential East Channel emergency access road. We have a plan to get that easement within the next 4 to 6 months. A little ambitious, but maybe we can do it. And so we have really great points of contact for that. We talked about contingency for tideland cleanup regarding the 11.2-mile landslide site. If WCA is not able to get funds to clean that up, if we're not scoped for it in our preliminary damage assessment per FEMA, then they need to clean that up because there are some concerning hazards out there that mm-hmm. are their obligation. So,
and it's state tidelands.
And they're state tidelands.
Yes.
So there's some complications with it, of course, but we're going to push them to meet the obligation there. Petroglyph Beach, we found out that Petersburg's been getting paid all this time for their state parks and management thereof, and Wrangell's been for 30 years forgotten on that, so we're going to look at getting an MOA drafted for the Petroglyph Beach State Park, in the very least, get paid for the management thereof, and get some funding to recapitalize that facility.
And have the money stay in Wrangell.
Have the money stay in Wrangell, because we can do things in a little bit shorter order here, so... We also talked about their ADV fund, which is their abandoned derelict vessel fund, in regards to the sunken barges and tug out at the mill site. At a preliminary meeting with Aaron Timian, who's running point on that program, they're still drafting the regs, but they're aware that we're high on the list and we're going to be some of the first to the table on that program. So we're kind of ironing out possibilities. Do we drag them further out? Do we lift them up? Probably they're probably not going to get lifted up, is what I'm gathering. So. What other controls can we put in place and to alleviate that issue? And then we talked about our entitlement lands. So we are formally approved for management rights for all of our entitlement lands, meaning if we wanted to establish a use and effectuate that use, we can do that. So that's very exciting, and I'll have a few more comments on that as we go along. And what else did we do? Chris Goines is the South Coast Director for DOT. Really ambitious younger director. I think we had a really productive meeting there. Promised to get the airport generator done in the next few months. They are going to submit the application to the FAA themselves, not make the borough do it, and they're going to see that through. Commissioner Anderson at DOT is also pledged to do that. Me and Mayor Gilbert cornered him in the pre-funk at the State of the State. And
after this speech, I cornered him again.
We drilled him, so yeah. Very exciting. We're also coordinating possible synergies on the DOT Bluff project from 6 to 8 Mile. That project, they have a contractor on board. I understand it to be related to the Schnabel family.